Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. Tonight, we have a very interesting couple joining us, Peter Messerschmidt and Reverend Sarah Nash, are in the house. And this show tonight has a bit of a show and tell aspect to it, which can be seen on www.paraflix.com. However, their show will not air until June of 24, as in June 23rd, 2024 on Paraflix. But you've heard it first, and this is that interview tonight. So please welcome Peter Messerschmidt as well as Reverend Sarah Nash.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Join me and my guest this evening as we step into a different sort of a world that involves highly sensitive individuals as well as those who study psychicology. Yes, indeed, we are talking about my guest this evening, Peter Messerschmidt and Reverend Sarah Nash. Let's start with Peter Messerschmidt. He would claim to be a highly sensitive person, someone who has known this for a very long time and had discovered the name highly sensitive person in 1997. Yes, believe it or not, there's actually a title for that. And he went through a lot of his life not just being sensitive, but he's also been very aware of it, as well as many as 15 to 20% of the population are actually described and perhaps maybe even diagnosed as this term. Unfortunately, though, he feels being sensitive carries some incorrect negative connotations to it and cultural biases that often lead sensitive people to becoming misdiagnosed and hiding from their true nature. Sarah, on the other hand, has devoted more than 35 years to studying and researching spiritual phenomena, the paranormal, the supernatural, as well as the occult. She became attuned as a Reiki master teacher in 2009 with her therapeutic training as a practitioner through the Spiritual Response Association and completed that in 2011. She was personally mentored by the school's founder, Robert Detzler. Turning this to something most of us have not heard before, a proponent for psychicology, which is, by the way, the way the bioenergetic fields are harmed by the other EMF, known as emotional manipulative frequency, she says it makes sense with her spiritual and intuitive guidance to serve as an integrative practitioner working with medical doctors and other colleagues in the fields of healing, spirituality, and metaphysics. We have a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and enjoy yourself as we come into the world of highly sensitive people, as well as learn just a little bit more about psychicology. Please welcome my guests, Peter Messerschmidt and Reverend Sarah Nash. Well, good evening, Sarah and Peter, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, this is going to be a really great show because it's so interesting, and I think everybody is going to actually learn something from both of them, rather just one, but both of them tonight. But we're going to get started because there is a lot of information that we're going to basically bring to you this evening. So what I do for both of you, I want you to think back. I always start a foundation on my guests, and I like to go back as far as you can just to try to remember when something either unusual or you felt like you're having some kind of an experience going on, and maybe that started you with your journeys on where you have become now. So, Peter, why don't we start with you?
Okay. Well, I was born and raised in Denmark, and we traveled incessantly, which meant I spent a lot of time by myself as a kid. And I think my earliest awareness of not being quite the same as the people around me was the number of times my mom and dad had to retrieve me from some flower bush or some place outside where I was down inside something studying it from about that far away, because I wanted to go inwards into the world rather than outwards.
Yeah.
And I don't have a clear sense of how that arrived to me. I just know that it was very different from the few other kids that were around. I mean, we'd be in a foreign country somewhere, so I didn't really have time to make a lot of friends. And it just felt natural to me to go inwards into things rather than out into the world. And that was really my earliest recollection of being anything different. Subsequently, I had some sense of it because my mom had a great aspiration for me to be artistic. And, you know, she'd give me a notebook and pencil, colored pencils and stuff, and expect me to draw a house and a dog. And I drew little tiny dots and little tiny patterns. And in fact, if I can show you this.
Yeah, why don't you show us? So as I mentioned in the introduction, Peter has done quite remarkable hand work, by the way. This is not a stencil. This is all done by hand. Why don't you show us a few of those and explain to us what you're showing us?
I will show you here, for example. This is a completely...
Here. There we go.
Okay. That is a completely freehand painted design. I have no plan. I have no sketch. I have no photograph. I just sit down with a very smooth rock and some colors, and I start creating something. And I don't necessarily even know how it happens, but in a large piece like this, many hours later, this emerges. And sometimes I even find myself looking at it and thinking, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm. He used to sign letters to me in college, just his signature, but he also makes, he makes me these cards. And so this is, you know, it looks three-dimensional.
Yeah.
Occasionally they do, but show them what you...
Yeah.
Tell everybody the name that you have. Is this a name that you created for the stone, or is this the actual name of the stone?
Alchemy Stones is kind of a hallmark or brand, and we actually came up with it together.
Yeah.
Because essentially this is taking something very ordinary like a rock. Anybody can go to the beach and pick up a rock, and they're everywhere. And then you take this ordinary rock, and I'm just borrowing it for a short time, and I put a design like this on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of borrowing loosely from sacred alchemy. You know, going back to the Middle Ages, they tried to turn lead into gold. Well, I'm taking a rock and turning it into art.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also my, what appeals to me is the impermanence of it, because, you know, this is 100 million years old.
Mm-hmm.
I get to borrow it for, if I'm lucky, this design will stay on it for 100, maybe 200 years. Mm-hmm. And it just goes back to being a rock.
Mm-hmm. Do you polish
them? We ask permission for the rock, from the rocks too, by the way. Not every rock wants to get painted on.
Oh, so. That's interesting. Yeah. And there are places too. I mean, I'm from Minnesota, And up we call it the North Shore, up to where I live.
Right.
Or you're not even supposed to take a rock at all. You're supposed to leave all the rocks there. Well, you know, there's so many rocks and they're so smooth because of the Lake Superior that's always, you know, going over them. Do you put a special coating on those rocks?
They are as we find them. I like to just leave it as natural as possible. So a large part of the process is it's very tactile. Mm-hmm. You know, I pick up the rock and I have to carry it around for a while. Mm-hmm. And if it feels just right and I can tell this is going to be a good painting rock, then it comes home. And for every 1,000 I pick up, you know, maybe 2 or 3 can actually end up coming home because rocks are full of little fissures and faults mm-hmm. and flaws. And so right. they're just not smooth enough. And it has to talk to me energetically.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as a bit of backstory to that, I grew up in a very strictly cold, scientific, if you can't see and measure it, it doesn't exist
mm-hmm.
family. And so this idea of
talking to trees
mm-hmm. and talking to rocks, that
there's something wrong.
That yeah. means there's something wrong with you, and you should probably go to an institution and be treated or something like that.
Are you mental?
Right. Exactly.
Well, you know, you've heard people, you know, when people go and hug a tree, I've heard this, and I haven't done it yet. I just heard this. If you go and hug a tree, if you hug it long enough, I think they say you could feel either the vibration or something from within that tree. And
100%. Yes. And it's the same with back.
Yeah. And a lot of things with plants too. You know, people talk to their plants. I mean, they may not admit it to anybody, but and aren't you a pretty one today? I mean, you know, I don't know. But Peter, hold up another rock that you have there, a stone.
Just to segue back to your original question, where did this begin?
Yeah.
This is the oldest known example I have. This came out of one of my mother's cookbooks. This is what I did.
Here. Wow.
She saved it.
Oh my.
And if you look at it very closely, you can see he was 6 years old.
Yeah. So my question to you, this is why I want to impress upon everyone, what you're looking at here is not a stamp. It's not a stencil. Your detail is so precise that it's almost, you know, when you look at it, it's like, are you sure this isn't a stamp? My goodness, the ability to be able to be that precise is just remarkable. And that just kind of came right out of you, huh?
That just came right out of me. And it's one of those things that when something like this appears on a rock, it has been in here at some point before that. And I can close my eyes sometimes and I can see these things dancing around in there, and it's like the entire universe is there. And I can't help but think that, I'm sure you're familiar with automatic writing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is almost feels like it's a version of that. I am guided by something that isn't me, because I am a D-minus art student.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, I sucked at art when I was mm-hmm. in school. I could not draw anything to save my life.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this appears. And I will look at these pieces several years after I've done them, and I'm saying, I actually did that. I don't know how that happened, but I did that.
Hold one up again. I want to ask a question about one of them. Anyone is fine that you can see.
I want to talk about the intention behind that, though, because I'm witnessing when he actually does the art. I could literally be on fire. We joke about this, but I hope it never happens. But there have been moments where I've had something that was imperative. I needed to get his attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, Peter, Peter, Peter. And he's in his studio, and he'll look up and I'll be like, I'm on fire, and he'll go, that's a nice deer, you know.
But the
bottom line is that I really began paying attention then, and this actually kind of it did something to our relationship for a very short period. Well, I mean, I was like, how could you not love me? That's a rock, you know.
Yeah.
The thing is, as a channel and a medium myself, I decided that it was important for me to kind of get an idea of what was coming through to him. And it was almost like I was like watching the binary code from the universe, like being channeled down inside of him. And it was in, because I can see the different kinds of light spectrums. My ability to see has been actually scientifically proven. It's wow. Better than it's like, I see spectrums of colors that most humans cannot. But the bottom line was that I decided to start handing him stones and telling him to put intention in them. And that was the early days, because now he does chakra sets. And as a Reiki master teacher, I imbue Reiki into some of the stones, and it's like, if he's working on a root chakra, all the way up, and then in fact even the eighth chakra, which was something that came through to me, that a lot of people talk about, that we have so many chakras around our bodies. But the bottom line was that I began witnessing different kinds of colors and energies coming like through his like divine, so his crown chakra even, and then they would just show up, and there's a math to it too. So
yeah, you know, I was gonna, when I see the type of artwork and the work that you have on the stones, my first thought is, how do you choose the colors? And then secondly, the pattern is always very interesting too, but is there reasoning, or do you see the imagery in your head that it's going to look a certain way with certain colors, and then you just automatically start, you know, doing what you do? What can you tell us about your color schemes and the colors that you choose?
Well, a lot of it, like, you know, you look at something like this, which we can get a little closer to the camera.
Yeah.
All the designs are created from the center out.
Okay.
This is not the so-called dot painting that has become very popular. I mean, these designs, I've been doing them as pen and ink on paper for over 50 years.
Yeah.
The colors are, I mean, as Sarah said, we do some that have a very specific intention, and they are, for example,
like this one that he gave me for Valentine's Day.
Oh, that's many years ago. That's nice.
And it was essentially, I love you from all four directions.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are, you know, it's actually pulling from some indigenous elements with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and speaking of indigenous elements, some of the rocks that we have picked up are on First Nations land. And we had an experience where we were picking up some rocks, and we were out on the coast here. We live in Washington, upstate. And
we were out there, and all of a sudden the tribal police pulls up and comes over to have a chat. And apparently this officer was actually driving one of the elders around, and they weren't seeing a problem. They were just curious. They wanted to know what we were doing. And so we started, talking about this. And I actually had a rock with me in the car, so I could show them. Mm-hmm. And they really liked what we were doing. And
they said, loved it.
You're welcome to pick the rocks, but whenever you do, please leave a finished one here.
Yes.
So there's always an exchange, and you know, we've honored that ever since.
Ever since. And we actually gave it. It was up by Rialto.
Yeah.
Yeah, La Push. And it was a really beautiful moment, because, you know, we just were like, oh my God, that's right. We are on First Nation. We shouldn't be doing this. And so they did. They chuckled and they said, well, it's good that you know that. So what are you doing with them?
Mm-hmm. Well,
so we kind of got permission.
I think that was great. The thing that I would wonder about is, so you're on this land, and if somebody else walks there and then they see this rock, they'll probably pick it up and they'll want to keep it.
Absolutely. So, we do leave them around from time to time.
Yeah. And so you know that they're going to be picked up by somebody, because that's the whole thing. Now, one of the things that I can't remember if I read this on your site at all, but each rock might represent something. So when I was at, how I came to know these two was at a conference actually in Washington months ago. But Sarah, you're the one who actually picked, let me see if I can get this up here. I don't know if it'll be very, very clear, but this is the one, it looks a little blurry, but this is the one that you picked for me. I don't know if I can do this. Picked for me. And I've had it ever since.
That was a weird first stone.
Yeah. Do you remember what, do you know if this one has a particular meaning?
Yes, it's a root chakra stone.
Okay.
It's essentially that.
It helps keep you grounded as much as anything.
Right. I know that you were having an issue. And I remember the conversation that you had with someone who had commented that you were being a bit of a shapeshifter at that time. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of interesting. So I thought perhaps if you were a bit more grounded and because I mean, you were being pulled in so many different directions as a speaker. And it was so great to make this connection with you. But I felt that it would really be beneficial for you to have something as a touchstone.
Oh,
some
yeah.
people, their root chakras, to be a little bit more tethered to the earth, so to speak.
Yeah. And so it's interesting how the paint or whatever you use is so smooth on here. That's why I was wondering if you polish it. You don't polish it afterwards, do you?
Afterwards, it gets a very durable coat of something like a marine grade varnish, which keeps the pattern intact over time.
Yeah.
Which came about, we had to experiment with this, because when we started doing arts and craft shows, people wanted to know, can I take this outside? Can I leave it on my parents' gravestone? Can I put it in a flower pot? Will it be okay? And so I eventually came up with a very durable finish, and we have some that have been outside in our yard for 10 years or so.
Yeah, at least. And so all the reds turn really pink. Mm-hmm. But we have people who send them back to us because they keep it in their purse, or they keep it with their altar, or they even have it in their pocket, and sometimes they fade. Mm-hmm. So they'll send them back to us, and Peter will touch them.
I'll touch it.
Yeah.
Well, we are kind of a team gig. I mean,
that is true. Yes.
We work together extensively, and it goes both ways. Mm-hmm. You know, she helps me with the intention and purpose and really understanding what patterns mean, because I'm one of the analogies I like to use is that, you know, I'm like a master gardener who grows amazing healing herbs, but I don't do potions. She does the potion part of it.
This is one of his earliest designs.
Oh, cool.
And he gave it to me as an anniversary present when we were, you know, young and poor. Now we're olding and poor, but
I know.
Bottom line is that our friends started seeing these stones, because he used to just draw them.
Yep.
Before there were stones, this is one of the oldest surviving drawings I have.
Beautiful.
I just doodled on paper like this, and it became bookmarks, and there's a limit to how many bookmarks you need.
So we had friends that saw them, and they were like, hey, can he make me one?
Mm-hmm.
And so he started like making them from time to time. But then we had a friend whose a family member was getting married, and they wanted 106 of them.
Oh my god. Yeah, but one for everybody.
That's when he was like, yeah, that's going to cost you.
Yeah.
So that was the first time we actually sold an alchemy stone.
Yeah.
How long does it take you to create what? Now, like this one, this one. Now, I remember this. I remember the conference, because I remember you had, a box. I thought you had several different ones of these. Okay. So I thought, like Sarah, I remember when you reached over and you were actually looking in the box, which had many, many different, patterns of these. And it was like, you were trying to find just that right one for me. Actually, you put one back and then you picked this one as an alternative. And I thought, okay, so my question to you is, twofold. One, how long does it take you to even do the smallest, design? And number two, do the designs all have a specific type of, I don't want to use the word message, one's for more peace, one's for more grounding, one's for luck, one's for this, one's for that. Do you have specific patterns that are specific to what they do?
Okay, well, first question, the little stone like you have there, that something like that takes me about 15, 20 minutes, something in that range. It's kind of hard to decide exactly how long it takes to do something because the colors have to dry. Mm-hmm. Because if they touch, they'll run. And so much of the time I'm actually working on 7 or 8 stones in parallel and I'm going down the line. So I have to kind of come back and calculate.
But that took you years to, I mean, he forgets that he's a master and he's been doing this for so long,
yeah.
Like driving a car that's, not an automatic, it's a standard, you just do it. But yeah, it's taken him years and years to really hone what he's got going on. And sometimes I'll see him wander around with a stone talking to it for a couple of days. And then all of a sudden he just sits down and it happens.
Right.
Wow.
And then something like this, which is quite sizable.
Yeah, that's
That probably have 2 or 3 days work in it, all told, if you add it together.
Wow. So, well, and if people want, you do have and we'll get this at the end of the show, you do have a website where people can actually order these or pick something. You do have, you have Etsy too, don't
you? I have an Etsy shop which has, at any given time, at least 100 different stones to choose from.
Okay.
But to get back to the other part of your question, yes, the energy is very interesting because it's like the stones tell me what to put there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I can pick up this stone, and this stone does not get to have a blue star on it. It gets to have this on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of intuitively know that when I sit down with it. Again, I don't know where that comes from.
It goes through phases. I'm going to cut you off here for just a moment. It comes from what some people might call source, God, the intellect, the divine intellect lives in the heart. And I see him go from the heart. But truly, sometimes we get messages. When I say we do. I'll hear something or I'll have that knowing. Mm-hmm. And he'll come upstairs and he'll say, incoming from the big giant head.
Yeah. We do say that.
We get a lot of downloads that are very similar. And mm-hmm. I think we have just been doing it for so long. I mean, I've known him since I was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a long, beautiful story, darling.
Yeah.
Essentially, to go back to what you were talking about, why did I pick out that stone for you? A lot of that has to do with when I used to work for police departments.
Mm-hmm.
It all started with when I was taking a class in domestic violence,
mm-hmm.
A self-defense course. And I was friends with the chief of police for the LAPD. This is in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of knew that I had, as you call it, the gift, mm-hmm. or clairvoyance or what have you. And they don't call us psychics. We're not hired as psychics. We're hired as consultants. They call us consultants.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't done it professionally now for over 10 years. Well, mm-hmm. yeah, about 10 years. But I will see a glow around an item. It's kind of like a neon blue glow, and I've always seen that. Mm-hmm. And so one of the women that I was doing the class with had said something to, anyways, the story, as it goes, it's like, she can help you find the clothing that mm-hmm. belongs to the victim. Can you give her a shot? And they had this big pile of clothing. It was just dumped in the middle of the evidence room. Right. And they said, okay, fine. Can you see if you can help us pick it out? Because otherwise it's going to take us years. And I did. So I have about an 87% accuracy rate just in clinical trials. Wow. In and of itself. Just the work that I do, though, it's always about that blue glow. I'll see this neon blue glow around something that, belongs or needs to have something that needs to be paid attention to. And I do that in my psychic sessions with tarot cards and with Peter's alchemy stones too.
Yeah, that's interesting that you say that about that glow. So you're the second person now that I know personally that has seen glows around things. And the other person that I'm referring to is actually a treasure hunter, and she had actually she's very famous, and she found figured out, I can't remember where, someone was murdered a long time ago and cracked the case and all that. But she always talked about a glow as well, that when she looks at a map for like treasure and stuff. Mm-hmm. Now keep in mind, people, that if this is on private property, it stays there, it's not yours. But anyway, yeah. You know, and she used to say, yeah, I could look at a map and then all of a sudden this glow comes up and it like pinpoints right exactly where.
That's exactly what happens. Yeah. And Peter has been with me. In fact, the last time it happened, we had a police department friend from a police department call. They were missing, a child was missing.
Yeah.
Anyways, they're like, can you help us? And we were in the car, I was on my cell phone, and I looked up and there was this street named Haynes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, blah, blah. You remember that?
I remember that. Yeah. Haynes.
And I was like, it has something to do with Haynes. And I'm like, either Haynes, Alaska, or the last name of the person. Mm-hmm. And that was all that they needed. And the guy on the phone, he was just like, oh my God, okay, thank you. Click. And that was it.
Yeah,
click. They were able to, because yeah.
Yeah, this is you. My bill's in the mail. Okay, well, all right. Hey, don't hang up on me yet. You know, right? it is amazing, though, when we talk about gifts to the level, not a lot of people can have these gifts, and they come from different places. And Peter, I'm going to put you on hold for a moment. We're going to shift over to Sarah, but to kind of wrap up with Peter a little bit here. Peter is a highly sensitive individual. I think there's a name for it. What is it?
HSP, or it's also more scientifically referred to a sensory processing sensitivity, which basically, elevator speech version, you experience everything far more intensely than most people, whether it's color, noise, just being in a room full of people.
Yep.
And so you know, when the candle burns brighter, it burns out faster. And the same thing happens to me. I can be like at the conference where we met, and at the end of it, I need to sit in a room by myself for a week and recover from it, because I'm totally worn out.
I don't know if there's a difference between that and an empath. I've always been highly sensitive. I would probably be in the top.
There's a huge difference between being an empath and a highly sensitive
person. Because she's both.
Although HSPs, if you look at Dr. Elaine Aron's work, Alanis Morissette did a really great, she's sort of like the spokesperson for HSPs, but just because you're an HSP doesn't mean that you're an empath, and an empath doesn't necessarily become or is an HSP. It is definitely a trait that you have. You're born with it. A lot of people have been misdiagnosed as being on the spectrum. That was me. Mm-hmm. I'm also deaf, but you know, being an HSP is how Peter and I reconnected back in 1997. After, because my son had been diagnosed as an HSP.
So what is kind of the difference? Because I've always referred I've known all my life, and I know my father definitely was very, very overly sensitive. And I know that I've always been very, very sensitive where I can feel things, and everything's more intense to me too. Everything's brighter, louder, you name it. And then I'm exhausted, you know, and I need a moment to just get away from people. When I go into a room of people, for example, and there's all this unsettled energy, it absolutely tears me to pieces rather than some people are very energized by that, right? But me, depending on the group, sometimes it might be okay, but then, you know, we call those people energy vampires, where they just suck it right out of you in a heartbeat.
That's a very real part of the thing. And it's almost like becoming an epidemic of that kind of energy vampirism.
So. Yeah. What would you say would be one of the fine line differences between someone that's highly sensitive and an empath? Is there one thing that makes them a little different? Do you know?
Yeah, being an empath has to do more with the spiritual and emotional center, mm-hmm. which doesn't mean to say that an HSP doesn't also, because they tend to go hand in hand.
Yeah.
But just because if you go to Dr. Elaine Aaron's page on HSPs, it's you can take that test. And, you know, just because they say HSPs don't like overhead lighting, we don't.
Yes.
But there's so much more involved than just like, oh, I don't like overhead lighting, or, you know, I can't stand rooms with, you know, loud noises. Right. I mean, really, and it's a very long process.
Mm-hmm.
And so being an empath, though, I can think of some really incredible people in our profession that are empathic, but they're also very extroverted. Mm-hmm. You'll find that most HSPs tend to be a bit more introverted. We're better one-on-one, mm-hmm. which is probably, Kelly, why you're such a great interviewer. Because really just like one-on-one stuff. So.
Are you drinking, Sarah?
No, not yet. I don't.
Well, let's drink to Sarah. Yeah, well, no, the thing is I'm kind of 50-50. I kind of swing. I'm a Libra, so I swing a lot, but I'm also hyper reactive too, which is something that medically I've learned of myself for the last several years, is that like I could go up and probably smell paint on a wall and break out from it. But, you know, because I'm just so hyper reactive on everything, my body just goes into overdrive. But we'll put that one on hold for a moment. Now we're going to switch. And thank you, Peter, because I want people, at the end, we're going to give links, and I'm going to give websites and stuff like that where people can find you and also find those alchemy stones, which is just fabulous, fabulous.
Well, thank
Sarah,
you.
Now we're going to go and we're going to jiggle over to you. And I want you to also kind of, do the thing for me. When did this all kind of start for you, and how has this evolved in your life? Because you have kind of expanded into a lot of your gifts. So,
thank you. Yes, I have expanded, and I will continue to expand and contract.
Yeah.
Well, this year is just decoration. Let's start with this. I was born deaf.
Okay.
And I think that had a lot to do when one of our senses is suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like they say people who are blind, and it's true. They say it's proven. If you're blind, you hear better. It's just like your body will measure it out. So I think that I was able to enhance the vision that I already have by being able to see auras around people, even, and I thought everybody could see that. That's when I found out that was not the case. That was sort of like my whole world. It was like the reverse Pleasantville. It was like this multicolored thing that just suddenly became very black and white.
Yeah.
And learning how to, I could hear people's thoughts. Mm-hmm. I could see their lips moving, and I couldn't hear what they were saying, but it felt like they were lying. So I think that had a lot to do with it, with my growing up. And then when they found out, it was like, she's not stupid, she's just deaf. So now, being able to hear voices, though, like when I hear something out of this ear, I know that it's non-corporeal. Corporeal. That word. It's a reading word, darling. And so I don't know if people hear, do you ever have any of your clients or your the people talk about ringing in their ears? It's not tinnitus. It's a ringing. Even Peter Frampton, in his song, there's a ringing in my ears. Are you thinking of me? So I know it, based on the sound and the pitch, if it's my children, if it's my husband, it's like a telephone call. Mm-hmm. You know, it's plugging into the interstellar ESP channel.
Mm-hmm.
But I started sitting in front of electrical outlets as a small child, not to plug in and hurt myself.
Yeah.
But I was using the electricity to pull forth an image that I could talk to. And that's one of my earliest memories. And I also remember learning my ABCs and levitating off. I would like float down mm-hmm. from this little tiny jungle gym that we had in our backyard. And I remember once my dad was mowing the lawn and he stopped and he looked at me and he kind of looked at what he had, you know, his drink, and he threw it out.
Mm-hmm.
But so, yeah, I was that kid that just, I didn't know any different. And we had a quiet life as a child. Then when my parents divorced, So when I was 8, my mother took me to a priest and she said she needs an exorcism. The priest, though, it was the greatest moment of my life because he was the first person that validated me.
Mm-hmm.
And he shooed my mother out of the room and he said, okay, sit down, tell me what's going on. And he asked me some very pointed questions and I just answered him. And he said, and so he turned around and he handed me a book and it was about Joan of Arc. Mm-hmm. And he said, this is your patron saint. She ended very badly. So stop telling people about these things or you too are going to scare people. And that's it. He never said that I, you know, oh, you're lying or what have you. And then I was sent away for 3 years.
You were sent away, my dear, to a place.
I have memories that are, did this, this is where Peter and I really, it was because I met him right before that happened.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, it's, I, all this time I thought I was living in Michigan with my mm-hmm. mother
mm-hmm.
and that it couldn't be possible, but there's, that's where it gets kind of weird.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have really broken memories. It's like, it's hard to talk about in just a half an hour.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to, don't reveal anything you don't want to reveal. There's just things that were kind of going through my head as you were kind of telling your story. You know, when we're young and we have experiences that a lot of people or a lot of our peers or classmates don't seem to have. See, I started recognizing very young. You'll see in my introduction when you rewatch the show, you're going to see my life in about a minute and a half, and you're going to see all kinds of things that have happened to me as well. But what's interesting is back then, things were, keep in mind, I grew up very religious, very spiritual. Everything was about, you know, God and angels and everything like that. But then as I started to get older, and I'm talking like 7, 8, 9 years old, all of a sudden, I start having what I know to this day to be some type of paranormal experience, right? But you can't talk about this stuff with your classmates. And my sister, actually, this is very interesting, and I'm going to get back to you in a second, but my sister ran into one of my classmates, so probably a couple months ago. And he asked how I was doing, and he says, yeah, I remember her as being very quiet and inward and just not talking and et cetera, et cetera. But you see, this isn't just because of the experiences that I was having. It was because of all kinds of different things that were going on in my life that just kept me inward. But if he knew me today, I am night and day from that girl that he used to know back in the day. I am more extrovertish, and I can go inward when I want to go inward, but I'm nothing like what I used to be. And that's what would shock people to know about me, you know, in this day. So when you went through all your experiences and you were coming into your gifts, or your gifts were coming into you, I know it must have been difficult for you to find somebody who could maybe relate to some of this stuff, because back then they termed it differently, or you went to a psychologist or a counselor, whatever. And then, of course, you're on medication. Yeah. And it's just unbelievable, the stuff that people go through, you know. So what would you say is your greatest gift? Out of all the gifts that you have, are you psychically inclined? Because I know that in the introduction I said, what did I say? Psychology. That was a very interesting.
Psychology, absolutely. Yeah,
talk a little bit about that, because I mentioned.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I figured that as long as I was able to get through my childhood and the things that I endured, I kept it. Of course, you know, you hide molestation, yeah, and abuse, and you don't talk about it in families because, I mean, God forbid that should happen.
Yeah.
But as I grew, I realized I had most of my equanimity intact, at least I thought I did. Mm-hmm. So I went to school to learn how to become an adolescent criminal psychologist. I thought perhaps if I could have gotten through, and I was a good person. I felt that I had integrity, and I feel that I have integrity. Mm-hmm. But so I went to, and I became a Jungian analyst. And so when I did my internship at Challenger Memorial Youth Center in Lancaster, California, I realized I cannot do this. I stepped away from that. And then I became a mother. I had children, and mm-hmm. and I really, really loved that part of it. But more importantly, it was like learning how to bridge that gap between what you know emotionally and what you hear spiritually, psychically, what you feel as an empath.
Right.
It's like somebody can be sitting there smiling and telling you all kinds of things, and you know goddamn well, excuse me, leave that out. That they're lying.
Yeah, I know.
And so I realized I was an emotional genius.
Mm-hmm.
And so Carla McLaren's work, you know, is the, you know, the language of emotions, learning how to bridge that gap between being psychic,
yeah,
also being an analyst, a Jungian analyst. So that's when I picked up tarot cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I started using those signs and symbols and images to really pattern recognition and being able to put together a story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Peter and I really connect, because I feel as though I'm getting all kinds of information. When I sit down and I do sessions with my clients,
mm-hmm.
it's like I'm looking through a viewfinder.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm getting images of their life and certain things, and even in the future. There's a finite amount of possibilities, though. And that's what I really, really like as far as being able to do tarot.
Mm-hmm.
So my greatest gift is being able to lay out these cards, which I'm writing a book about,
mm-hmm.
and put together a possible future, see what may happen, what came before, what the situation is, and where it's going, because I'm able to pull all of this emotional soup that my clients are feeling and pull energy through them of the people around them, mm-hmm. and create this,
mm-hmm.
in a session. So,
are you two, let's see, some people, I do know one, I don't know him personally anymore. There was someone that I met, actually I had him on my show 4 times years ago, and it wasn't a TV show then, it was just my podcast, where he had to be with his wife in order, like a conduit. Like they acted together like a strong conduit, and what without each other, they weren't as strong in what they could do. But then when they were together, all of a sudden things just kind of lit up, and it just, things were just greater and stronger and all that. Would you say that the both of you need to be together to be a strong unit in and of yourselves, or can you actually be separate from yourselves and still do what you can do fairly strongly. What would you say to that?
I'm going to step into this. Peter is extraordinarily grounding for me. If I'm working in a room and like there's portals opening and there's images coming in and out, like Manresa Castle, for crying out loud, places. Mm-hmm. I can have him come in and he'll ground it. Mm-hmm. But to do the work that I do, we've always been together. And that was the other thing. As children, before I knew him.
Yeah, we had a connection of some sort that's hard to
like
explain.
If it's remote viewing, like when he was in Africa as a child, I was pretty little. Like I knew that I was talking to someone. And so the story about how we met, if you've got a minute, it was the day that I found out I was adopted. It was my 8th birthday. And my mother, she wanted to destroy every good thing about anybody in the world ever. And anyway, so it was that day and I hadn't seen my dad, who I adored and still adore. I hadn't seen him in quite a while because I was 5 when they divorced. And so that morning she tells me that I'm adopted. And I was just like, oh my God. And I was like, you mean my daddy is not my daddy? Funny thing is I didn't ask her because I knew she was my mother.
Yeah.
I was like, you mean my dad's not my dad? Because I adored him. But I flung myself outside. I was running in our backyard. It was this long place. And Peter's father and my father, they were doing business together. My dad was a photographer. They were visiting from...
We were visiting from Denmark. I mean, just the chances that we would be in the LA area at the time. Well, my dad had business with her dad about some advertising and
because
printing.
Because he would do photography for major catalogs. So they sent Peter out into the backyard and I was crying on the grass.
She was hysterical, basically. I mean, and I was an awkward teenager and that's like... Here's this little blonde-haired kid screaming and
flailing about
like she just got stung by a bee.
I think it was more wailing about the fact that... So he stands over me, right? And keep in mind, he had hair then.
Yeah.
It was sort of this red golden thing. And so the sun's right there, and I look up at him, and I think I'm seeing one of my angels. Because
there's a halo. Yeah. Like, are you God?
I'm just trying to figure out something to say to this little kid to make her comfortable and not so desperately unhappy. It's like
he's got this accent, right?
Yeah.
Because at the time I spoke British English.
I was gonna say, you're not God now, are you? What does God speak?
But he says, are you all right? Yeah. I can just some help.
And then you looked up as an American and you said, oh my God, I love that accent. I love it. No. And he just melted, right?
I was 8.
Yeah, well.
And so for the entire weekend, I followed him around. Of course, you know, I don't know if you guys remember the, what was it called? This gyroscope.
Gyrographs.
I had one of those, and he was doing it all by himself, though. Mm-hmm. He didn't need the spirograph, and I was watching him, so but yeah.
You know, one of the things that's interesting is when we come together like that, because you know what amazes me about you, Peter, is that here you are standing over her and, you know, you're distraught and, not happy. And most guys these days, if that happens, they can't handle women's emotions like that. They'll just turn and walk away, or they'll just not even approach the area. So that's very...
Well, even as children, though, Kelly, I mean, he was 13, I was 8.
Yeah.
And, you know, he literally sat down next to me and I said, I don't have a family. This is not my family. And he held me in his arms.
Oh, my goodness.
Literally held me in his arms and said, you'll always have a family with me.
Oh, my goodness.
I've never forgotten that.
And how many years later? And here you are. Umpteen years later.
That's a whole different story.
That's a very long story. And that's a show all unto itself. But
And we'll probably have that show because I'm pretty pretty sure I can relate to some of the stuff you'll probably say. So, you know, I am so fascinated by you two, and for this show in particular, I would like you to now, I would like to have you back in the future, and we will go into another topic and keep
awesome.
Keep extending the topic that we have here. I've just been so mesmerized. I'm like, gosh, I would love to ask more. And I know that I have time limitations. That's the problem with me and my show. But I would like everybody to know a little bit more about how they can get a hold of you, where you might. Now, keep in mind, you're not going to be aired until June. So anytime after June, you can certainly let people know if you're going to be at any particular conference or how they can find you on websites. Take it from there. So,
okay. Well, I can be found through the website alchemystone.com. That is Alchemy Stone, one long word, not Alchemy Stones, no S, just alchemystone.com. And there are links there to my Etsy shop, and I usually have a calendar up that says where we're going to be at shows next.
Mm-hmm. Good.
I update that on a regular basis. Otherwise, as I said, you can search for Alchemy Stones on Etsy, and you can find usually at least 100 that are recent and older work that are available for sale.
Great.
And get ready for the Oracle deck for the Gateway Stones. We were talking about the Gateway Stones earlier, mm-hmm. Kelly, you and I had a break. Mm-hmm. And that's one of our more fascinating elements and things that we want to do. We were also thinking about doing a project, the Peace Project for World Peace.
Wow. Oh,
we wanted to put a stone in every country in the world. So we're working on that. Know that there are stones in Washington, D.C. that we have put out there when we went out there for the World Peace Project that was happening. What was that? 2015, I think it was. But you can find me at thewhitelightexpress.org. Mm-hmm. That has been my ministry. It's like, I'll pray for you if you pray for me. It's totally, I don't believe in paying to pray. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I find really abhorrent is, you know, it's like, if you want to have a spell cast, go see a witch and pay for that, or, you know, what have you. And that's beautiful. I mean, love it. But to pray for someone, I think, is like one of the greatest gifts that we can do for people.
Mm-hmm.
So the White Light Express is about that. Now, you know, it's like, I also have my page there, so you can find me and book a session if you want.
Mm-hmm. And I can't, yes, and take note of that, everyone, that if you need a session with Sarah, again, would it be more of a psychic medium, clairvoyant type experience? What kind of experience would they have with you?
Well, it's really a blend of, I call it cosmic triage. And essentially, it's the stop, drop, and roll. It's the center, ground, protect. And it really depends on the person coming in and what it is they're seeking. I don't often get to speak to dearly departed beloved ones, because it's up to them if they want to come in. Mm-hmm. Quite often, other people will come in. But, you know, it's like I tell people, come in with your questions and prepare to go through about 5 to 6 months of counseling in about an hour and a half. We're really going to burn through some of those issues and really get down to the core of what it is that is causing any of my clients to be blocked.
That's great. That's perfect. And I'm going to have all of this information at the end of the show, as well as show notes, because this is also going to be streamed on my very popular podcast as well. But we will have you back in the future. And how very fascinating, very wonderful work both of you are doing, and just very positive. And we don't have enough of that anymore in this world. And I'm so glad, especially with the stone, putting one in every country. Good Lord. I mean, good luck. You know, it's expensive unless you figure out a way on getting it there. Or people.
Well, exactly. But that's why we wanted to, we're actually in the process still. It's been taking us a couple of years to build the database to have people sponsor a stone.
Yes.
And we'll just send it to them, and they can do whatever they want with it. Just take a picture of it, put it up on the website. So that would be something that we would love to come back and talk to you about.
Yeah, that'd be great. So, and just know that our hearts are with you, and thank you for all your good work. And on that note, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or ParaX Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, ParaX Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.